This episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by The Ocean. Go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean to learn more. They offer fast and secure Ethereum and ERC-20 token trading. You can trade wallet to wallet with your peers on a high-performance, institutional-grade, decentralized platform. Get better liquidity, lower fees, and less risk in your own trading. Thanks to The Ocean for being a Ledger Status partner. Now here's our show. Real quick, if you go to ledgerstatus.com/learn, there is still time to sign up for the next course. Learn cryptocurrency trading to make more informed trading decisions for your portfolio. Learn how to manage risk and use an analytical mind when you approach these markets. They're volatile and they can be tough sometimes. Go to ledgerstatus.com/learn to learn more and use the code TURKEY for a special discount. Finally, just a quick note before we get started. Don't treat this episode as investment advice. We're not your financial advisors. We are just shooting the breeze about price. I'm talking to Aaron Lammer of CoinTalk. I hope you enjoy it. All right, I'm here with Aaron Lammer of CoinTalk. CoinTalk is my favorite crypto podcast. Aaron and Jay are always talking about good stuff and have great guests. And I wanted to have one or both of them on the show. I got Aaron, the coiner. The no coiner is not here today. Hey, Aaron.
Jay almost flipped back into being a coiner. I believe the king line is 3,300.
This is presumably. We do not know for sure that he would have bought
the
Bitcoin
king line is not like in an order book. It's more of like a phantom line.
That's right. He said he would buy if it hit 3,300.
I think he sold all of his coins at about Bitcoin 9,000, not on the way down, on the way up. And he said he would rebuy at 3,300. So we haven't quite tapped it. I think 3,450 was the local bottom.
I've got it right in front of me. The absolute bottom, if you're using BitMEX as your standard, because it's the most liquid Bitcoin trading platform, was around 3,430. So
that close.
Yeah, $130 from Jay's order. Let's say $150 from Jay's order if he had set it ahead of time.
Which he certainly has not.
Right. So the Kang line is really where Jay would have bought back in his head. But when you got to put money on the line and it's dying every day, setting those bids to say, you know what, this is where I'm stepping in and I'm catching that knife. That's a little bit harder. And in y'all's recent episode, I was saying that to him. Of course, he couldn't hear me because I was doing dishes in my kitchen, listening to your podcast. But yeah, if people aren't listening to your podcast, you need to listen to CoinTalk. I talk with Aaron and Lammer and a few other guys. Aaron and Jay, and a few other guys Lammer. in a Telegram chat.
We have a Telegram room.
Yeah, and it's fun. And we've been talking about the markets. We've been talking about what's the bottom. We've been talking about the Kang line, all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to have you on today because we're going to approach this episode from the viewpoint of how do you address the market? Like, whether you're not in crypto or you did sell like Jay, or you did, but we were just talking about before the show, most people that bought in 2018 or maybe the first half or the latter half of 2017 are underwater on their Bitcoin purchases. And if they bought any altcoins, then they're way underwater if they, you know, didn't take profit or didn't take enough profit, whatever you want to call it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So thanks for being here for that, Aaron.
Yeah, I feel like we like to talk about that almost as a generation. There's like Bitcoin 2K17 generation. Pretty much no matter what you did during that generation, other than selling the top, you're probably down in your portfolio, I would think.
Yeah, it would be hard to not be if you're in anything besides Bitcoin and you're just kind of buying and giving it some time, it would be very difficult to be up at this point.
Even if you did what sort of, I think, conservative and intelligent traders advise a newbie to do, which is to set a cyclical buy and cost average your way in, If you cost averaged your way in through 2017, you are definitely underwater right now.
Yeah, I think the numbers would support that. There was just that time where it was so expensive that averages you up pretty highly, like if you were buying with fiat November, December. But more important than anything is, what do we do now, right? So like someone, they invested throughout 2017, maybe they started buying in 2018. You know, I was telling people last year, I really stopped recommending to family and friends, like, hey, you should check out Bitcoin and crypto after about 4,000, because that was when, for me, I was like, you know, I don't really feel super comfortable telling people, hey, buy right now, like as it's on its way up, because it was up so much. What I started telling people was, wait until we hit at least a 50% retrace. And unfortunately, most people didn't really listen to that until it was like 15 to 20K. So then when the 50% retrace came, they were still buying at like 10,000 or something.
That's me. I'm right here. Yes.
Yeah. And it wasn't the worst thing in the world. Like, it would have been hard to say like, this is the absolute top, but there was plenty of evidence for the top being, you know, close or like looking for an unwind. You know, eventually though, there came the realization that the market cycle is now in effect, meaning that like this needs a proper unwind. So how you need to look at the market now is, how long does it take for the market to unwind, and how can you approach a market like that as a retail investor that's not trying to trade every little whipsaw throughout that tenure? And that's kind of where we're at now. And there was this point, you guys didn't talk about price on your show for a long time. Yeah. You talked about it right before it tanked. But
there wasn't much to talk about, you know?
Like, yeah, because there was all 6,200
and 6,400 and then 6,300. It was just kind of like, okay, no news to report.
Yeah, so there was all-time low volatility. And I was watching that really closely because I was anticipating, and really it outlasted my anticipation. Like, it took forever for the move to come. But what happens when you have these periods of all-time low volatility, it's really like a spring that's coiling up and it's ready to pounce, but you don't know necessarily which way it's going to go, like which way it's going to pounce, and it pounced down. I've long been looking for this. I call it like a big trap, right? So I was hoping that spring would pounce up before we did this move, but we just went straight down, which was interesting. And you have to be prepared to react for that. So now the question is like, have we seen a bottom? And what do you look for now to know, has this been a bottom or like the big bottom, you know? And so I think that's what's worth talking about today. And we can do that under the impression that someone is either looking to invest new dollars, like they want a dollar cost average in smartly for a new cycle. And then also someone who is in, but they're underwater, they're not at break even. So I think that's the way I want to approach this conversation and get your take on it with your own emotions, you know, your own like,
sure. Raw. Well, I'm person number two. I'm underwater. And I sort of envy person number one who would be buying in now, because I feel like this is probably a pretty good time to be buying, all things being equal. Maybe not like right here. I don't know, what are we at, like 4,200 or something right now?
Yeah, so at the time of recording, we're over 4,000, you can say safely.
Those 3,000s prices that were available, you know, I don't know. There's something to me that even near the top, when it started coming down, the like naysayers, the doomsayers, the Jays of the world were citing this 3,000 number. There seems to be some poetic justice if this is where it bottoms out, that it was sort of the nightmare that people enumerated about like a low price. And I didn't believe it at the time, but now, you know, even if you told me it was going to go down to 3,000, you know, we were going to have one more dip from here, I would still say like right around now doesn't seem like a terrible time to buy because you would probably catch it coming back up. I mean, yeah. It's going to be very hard to time the actual very, very low bottom. So anywhere sort of in that range isn't a terrible place to be. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. And I've been analyzing historical pricing extremely closely to try to get an understanding of what do I think has potential to be a bottom, right? And what was interesting is we basically bottomed out right in the middle of the two points that made sense to me from historical pricing, which isn't, you know, it's not the most surprising thing in the world because there's not a lot of historical pricing. Even when you think like, oh yeah, well, there's, you know, these supports at these points in time. Well, we only spent like a month or 2 months in each of these kind of ranges. So if you consider the first one that I was looking at for where we might see some relief was around the 4,300 range. And that's because last September and October, there was some consolidation in that zone. It's called like a high volume area, if you will, where a lot of people were trading Bitcoin around 4,300. And we had this local top in, you know, the beginning of September at around 4,900, 5K. And then we went all the way down. That was when we hit retested 3K because we had already broken through 3K in the summer after the Bcash stuff. And then that's when we went off to the races. So I was looking at 4,300 as potential support. And what's funny is, and then 3K and actually 2,700 was the high volume area for the range below that. So I was saying, okay, 4,300, and if not that, 2,700 to 3K. And we basically stopped right in the middle, so like around 3,500. And that's what took me by surprise. And I agree with you, the poetic justice is wonderful. Like the people that were just constantly citing 3K as like, this is the level. It is kind of great if that ends up being the bottom, because if they have to chase, that actually ends up being pretty bullish for Bitcoin, right?
When you say they have to chase, you mean the people who are waiting for 3K are eventually going to go, oh, shit, I didn't catch 3K. Now it's 4,600, but I'm basically imagining this going the historical way, so I'm probably going to buy at 4,600 anyway.
That's right. So you would decipher from that there is still money on the sidelines, if you will. I kind of hate that phrase, but... Right. People that are interested in these levels for some degree of move, that if they don't get their fill at 3K, then they have to chase the price up. And that's what can help sustain a move like this to continue a little beyond what you may expect. I don't know when I first said it, but while we were in that massive consolidation from 6,000 to 7,000, my point was similar to yours. If I thought that too many people were talking about 3K, so I actually was on the record saying I either think we won't reach it or that we'll spike well below it. Like, some let them buy at 3K and then they feel the pain as well, right? And that's not out of the spectrum of possibility. And I think I'll go ahead and get the spoiler out of the way, which is that I think we're going to range for quite some time. Like, you don't just unwind from a cycle and then resume the mania, right? So we've spent almost a year since the all-time high now, like, what, 10, 11 months since we reached an all-time high. But a lot of the same stuff that was kind of gross about the bull market is still around. Like, most of these ICOs aren't totally dead yet. They're not out of money. They haven't closed up shop. They may be completely wrecked, but they've got their reserves of their cryptocurrency or whatever else, you know?
I know you don't like this topic, Ledger, but there was a Tether printing during this 10% rise back up to above 4,000, no?
Yeah, I want to take this gift you've given me to say that I think the Tether FUD that exists in the world is trash.
So you don't include Tether in that things that are hanging around that are a little bit of a problem?
Not at all. To me, Tether is a product that was created by an exchange to allow people to go into a safe haven asset. And I think that the world of banking around crypto was probably extremely difficult, because it's still extremely difficult, but it was probably extremely difficult when they instantiated Tether. So I think there might be some gray areas in terms of how they accomplished what they accomplished for, hey, we're going to stick your fiat in this bank and you can redeem it. So maybe that was a challenge for them in terms of banking. But I don't think that it's not worth the risk for Bitfinex, who's made fortunes just being a crypto exchange, to defraud the crypto ecosystem with fake tethers or whatever. So to me, it's just a non-starter as an issue, and I don't buy the FUD at all. I think it's crappy FUD. So I think it's become a narrative of like, oh yeah, we'll pump because Tether printed. Well, to me, that could mean that it just means someone deposited dollars and is now entering the ecosystem. So that, you know, if you see 50 million Tethers print, maybe that's just demand for those Tethers to then be used to buy crypto. So maybe that's why the narrative was created. I don't know. I'm not as worried about all that. I just don't think that doesn't logically make sense for Bitfinex to be fraudulently printing Tethers.
My take would be, it doesn't matter whether there's actual fraud happening or the ongoing possibility of fraud. It's one of the negative marks that I would group in with the whole ICO and various shadery of the bull run that hasn't been expunged. And therefore, I think people are a little like, wait, am I going to go do this again? Do we think this is just going to happen again exactly the same way with all this stuff still in the exact same state?
Yeah, I mean, either way, like, opinions of Tether and ICOs aside, like, there hasn't been enough time to fully unwind, make crypto boring again, you know, like,
yeah.
Right now, crypto's still, it's still in, the ticker's still on CNBC, people are still talking about it, there's still a lot of attention being paid. So I don't think that we're just going to rage on to new all-time highs, because you need people to really nearly forget about it, right?
Yeah, but can it really wait that long? I mean, I feel like everything in the half-life of crypto, like a year is an eternity. Like even those cycles you're describing, I do think a lot of this stuff does need to kick into gear. Like when you look at the like life cycles of these alt projects and them needing to like pay staff, mm-hmm. you can't just like project startups and be like, we'll see you in 5 years. It's like no one can really afford that, especially like with their Ethereum at these prices.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
Once you start seeing people with dubious projects, but you know, large war chests of wealth, once you see their runways start to run out, then and they're going out of business, and they have these zombie tokens that they may be traded, but there's really no team or anything behind it. Once that stuff starts to get filtered out, then maybe you can have a more sustained cycle. Until then, I still think there's plenty of opportunities for people looking to be investors long-term, or people to be trading it actively. There's still volatility in the market. We just saw essentially the price of Bitcoin cut in half. And there will be times where we see the price of Bitcoin double, but we haven't fully escaped the bear market. Maybe we'll establish a bottom, but you can just range sideways for like 2 years. So that's what I would encourage people to be ready for. Like,
I mean, we only have to get to 7,000 to have doubled from the bottom. If we were sitting at 7,000 right now, I don't think either of us would be filled with confidence. We'd be a little bit excited, but I don't think we would necessarily be like, the next move is definitely double again from here.
And that's an important emotional state that you just established. Because if we do hit 7,000, I think you're right. I don't think it will incite mania. But that's still a lot of opportunity for people that are paying attention to this market. And I would cite, you're a lot smarter as an investor and consumer if you're paying attention and you're being cognizant of the market when the market is not in favor. You're being a contrarian in that case. And contrarian investors, they may have to be patient, but oftentimes they're more profitable in the long term. Kind of like the idea of a value investor in the stock market.
All right, so let's talk about me.
Let's talk about you.
I played everything very badly. My initial Bitcoin buys were in the 3,000 range. But then
Sumo Coin happened.
But then all kinds of alt nonsense happened. I also panic sold and bought my way up. I bought Bitcoin above 10,000. I bought Ethereum near its high, like all kinds of things. As everything fell apart, I just froze, just rode everything down basically with the same portfolio and bought a bunch of Ethereum actually, as Ethereum's been really cheap. So I've shifted some of what I had in Bitcoin into Ethereum. You know, I remember when I first saw, I think it was 0.027 Ethereum. It's like, wow, that's pretty crazy. You could buy that, you know, based on what happened over the last year, you know? Anyway, so I've just been holding on. Am I being stupid?
No, I don't think you're being stupid. And I think what you're doing, sometimes if we get in a losing position, we just love the idea of getting out of that particular position and we do a reshuffle. So your overall portfolio value, let's say someone invested $1,000 and now their portfolio is worth $500, but it's in the thing that they lost from $1,000 on. They just don't want it to be in that anymore. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that reshuffle is a psychological reset for someone. And it may be an okay idea. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a great one. But I do think that it's okay to, for instance, sell when you're at a loss if the price action, the chart, if you will, if people are willing to look at the charts, if it tells you that that's the right move at that time. And I think what a lot of people do, if they get down enough, let's say you bought at 10,000, right? You put your $1,000 in at 10,000. Well, if we get back to 6K or something like that, that 6,400-ish range that we dumped off of, well, that's now resistance from a technical perspective. So if we do get back to 6K, even if you bought at 10K, it might be okay to sell and then not get back in until it, you know, fully captures that and like shows you to buy again. Because if we get rejected off 6K, it could go back down to 4K, and then you can... Sure. You can swing trade to gain back, even though you're taking a technical loss on that singular trade. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that right now we're in a kind of a good buy range, which means I'm sort of not inclined to sell off holdings.
I agree with you. 6,000, let's say you're the 10K buyer. Yeah. I don't think selling at 4,000 is really the right call, even if we retest and do go back down to the FOMO Kang number or lower. I don't know that you're necessarily getting the best risk reward, because your risk is that we don't go back to those low lows and, you know, we blast up to 5 or 6K and you miss that opportunity cost, right?
My feeling is that if I'm willing to hold a year or two, we've got to at least once see above 6,000.
Yes. So I can personally, why would I personally why, stamp that one.
Why would I want to sell in the 4,000 or 3,000 range? You know, it just seems like, since both of us, I would say, are pretty toss-uppy about like whether we could be talking about going back down towards the bottom or like going up from here, like I wouldn't make a strong bet either way.
Yeah. Well, you go back to which level, the 6K range?
I mean, I would just say from right here, whether the next move is up or down, I don't have a strong bet to make.
Yeah, so I've been doing this regular analysis as part of Ledger Status Learn and giving people my take on like, here's the level that needs to hold or I expect to see new lows, and here's the level that I want to see to be able to capture up. I would say what we've done here is, you know, you go from 3,500 to 4,300. We're pumping while we talk. That's exciting. you know, you're paying too much attention if you see the $25 and changes in the market.
Oh, I got to tell you, it's been so long since it rallied that yesterday I was just sitting there pull refreshing it just because it was like the first time, you know,
it was felt good.
First time, yeah, to get like, oh, it made a move up. Oh, and another one. Oh, and another one. Wow, is it really going to break 4,300? Wow, yeah, it did. Like that was, that was a year ago. That was my everyday.
Yep. Yep. And that's what happens in bear markets. It's what happens in these long cycles of sideways. Like there's still opportunities is my point. And what I was trying to tell people or say in the market analysis that I do for Learn was basically that after $1,000 rebound off of a pretty capitulatory bottom, like some people just said, screw it, I give up. Like, you know, we're going to 2,000 cryptos a scam. You need that stuff. That's the capitulation that you look for as a buying opportunity. But now that you rebound, whatever that is, over almost $1,000 off of that, that's a point where you say, well, we need to wait and see where this consolidates and look for an opportunity to trade, get an entry or sell and look for new lows. And that requires some degree of technical analysis or ability to analyze markets. And if you don't want to do that, I would encourage everybody to, this is biased, of course, I would encourage everybody to gain some understanding of what it means to look at a chart and see the price, what's happening. But if you don't want to do that, I think generally just don't expect, hey, we're going to pop up to brand new highs and all that kind of stuff. And take it slow. Like you don't have to rush into all of this, especially when there's not this big hype cycle like we saw in 2017. It's going to take time to rebuild those same types of momentum moves.
I mean, as a pretty bad trader, we can both agree I'm not a very good trader. I think it's probably worthwhile whether you're buying now, whether you bought that bottom, or even whether you bought in at, you know, the 6,000 range, at which, you know, seemed like a reasonable time to buy, having fallen from 19,000 to 6,000, I could see people buying in there. It feels to me, if you're not confident that you can trade effectively, probably your best strategy is to just hold whatever position you got in at and try to, like, wait on it.
Wait on it or take some off the table at times where it feels obviously overextended. And I really struggle to describe how to know when that is, when you're not, like if someone's unwilling to look at a chart and identify that. But in general, where you had a big breakdown from is a place where you would expect to be significant resistance. So if we get back to the 6K range, then that's the type of place where you might want to think as an investor, like maybe I'll regret if we go back to 3K and I didn't take some off the table here at 6K. With the obvious opportunity cost that if we did break above that, you would miss out on that. But my point is I just expect us to range for longer. And, you know, 3,500 may not be the bottom. If you go back to prior bear markets and other markets, non-crypto markets, oftentimes like it can range for quite some time, and then you don't necessarily make a final bottom for a ways. Like we may make a new bottom, but it might be a year from now. So there's a lot of trading opportunities. There's a lot that you can do in the meantime, and what I tell most people, if you don't want to trade, if you don't want to learn to trade, if you don't want to take some of the bigger risks, then one of the things you can do is do a little bit every month, like if you're entering the market. Exiting the market is a different thing, but if you're entering the market and say you want to put in $1,000, then you can put in $100 per month, just the first of the month, and now at the end of a year, you've invested $1,200 in the market. And your price is going to literally be the same as the 12-month moving average. So the average price in 2018 is going to be what your price is. And I don't think at these levels that is a bad strategy at all. And that's, you're going to reduce your risks a lot. Now, some of your purchases might be in the 3,000s and some might be in the 5,000s. But you're buying at the average over time. I'd like to take a quick break to say thank you to The Ocean for being a Ledger Status partner. Go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean to learn more about it. What you get with The Ocean is a decentralized exchange, meaning you're trading wallet to wallet directly with your peers. They have a hybrid architecture. It decentralizes the most security vital parts of an exchange, but it preserves the speed and scalability because they use off-chain order books. Decentralized exchanges, I think, are going to be a really important part of moving forward in this ecosystem because you're maintaining custody of your coins the whole time. Try it for yourself today. All you have to do is go to ledgerstatus.com/theocean to check it out. And thanks so much to The Ocean for being a Ledger Status partner. I did this little Thanksgiving video, like how to talk to your family at Thanksgiving about crypto, because last year you were like, look at all this money I've made. And if they listen to you, they've now lost money. And I think under $5,000 Bitcoin will end up being relatively affordable Bitcoin in the long run. But you have to use a long-term lens, like to the point of 3K might not be the bottom, 2K might not be the bottom. There's a lot of risks to this as an asset class. And I personally also don't recommend people to make Bitcoin or crypto their only asset class that they invest in. I have, you know, retirement accounts and other savings accounts and stuff like that that are in traditional markets. And I think that's an important balance to maintain and not get too excited. Like, as cool as those stories were last year where someone was like, yeah, we sold our house and took the profits and invested it all in Bitcoin, and now we live in a campsite. You remember those?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the wisest thing in the
those
world.
Those people are like 50 to 70% underwater.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. I haven't checked back on that guy's story what time of year.
No, I just mean like at those, you know, people who are making huge bets during the bull run. You know, I mean, that is also like the cost average sort of quandary, which is if you were doing that like near the top, you did pretty badly. Like, it's almost like you should cost average and stop if there's a major gain.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to know when's an appropriate time for you to take profit. So in the traditional market, I just did this recently. Like in 2018, I've active traded traditional markets much more than I did over the past decade. In my working life, since I was in college in the early 2000s, or whatever you call it, I graduated college in 2008. So I entered the workforce in the depths of the bear market. So it was a fantastic time to start saving and to put that money to work in markets. So I've had a great run over the course of a decade in equity markets. And 2018 was the first time I really was like, you know what? Like, we're at the end of the business cycle here. And I took profits on a lot of tech stocks at different points in the year. And I started adjusting our 401k portfolio this year. And, you know, even if I don't capture the top, like, I feel pretty good that, like, I was redistributing some capital at the right time and reallocating from tech to more distressed sectors and stuff like that. And that's the type of adjustments that I was looking to make. You have to be willing to make those types of adjustments. What's funny is in our world, just buying the S&P outright, like an index fund, has been the best trade essentially for over a decade. And if you ask like someone from Japan if that was a good trade for them, they would say absolutely not, because their market has been flat for like 20 years. So we don't have a guarantee that buying the index is going to be the right move going forward. So you always, in my opinion, need to be careful about how you do things, but move slowly and then be willing to take profit at some point. And so far, I'm very happy with that. I sold the last of my Apple stock at like 225. So I was pretty pumped about that one, for example.
Sure. And, you know, by that same token, I think both of us sort of have a like long-term belief that like mm-hmm. Bitcoin will survive and endure.
Yes.
If you don't really believe that, I mean, the only real doomsday scenario, the only reason not to do what I'm doing right now, which is just holding my position and not trading or doing anything, would be if you really think that there's some sort of a death spiral.
Yeah, and I don't personally think there will be a full-on death spiral. Now, there are risks to it as an asset class. The last episode with Eric Townsend was a great story of the risks that exist, and I encourage people to listen to that. I do think you bring up a great transition point, which is to talk about, okay, well, that's how you approach Bitcoin. How do you approach altcoins?
Yeah. First up, Ethereum.
What's that?
First up, do Ethereum.
Ethereum, okay. Well, I think Ethereum has a closer parallel to Bitcoin, although Ethereum, it doesn't have all the same properties of Bitcoin. For one, it's they're going to continuously make more Ethereum. And also, it's a compute network, and we don't know that it's going to be the one that wins. Like, there are other smart contract platforms that have a shot against Ethereum, whether that's EOS or Tezos or whatever other ones exist.
Mystery Challenger 2019.
What's that?
I'm saying or a Mystery Challenger of 2019. Like, there will be more.
Oh yeah, there's some that haven't, like, they did ICOs in 2017 and haven't come out yet, like Definity and some others. Like, there's a lot of new work in that space, whereas if you look at things from a cryptocurrency point of view and not like a crypto asset network blockchain stuff point of view, Ethereum is less clearly the winner of that world, as Bitcoin is the proven king of all crypto, and especially cryptocurrency payment, stuff with payment attributes.
I feel like a different way to describe what you just said is, if we were gambling, I said, what is the chances that Bitcoin doesn't exist in 5 years? And what is the chances that Ethereum doesn't exist in 5 years? You would say that Ethereum has a higher chance of not existing in 5 years.
Of existing with minimal relevance, yeah. I mean, software lives. Software just tends to live. Like, so I think Ethereum and Bitcoin will both exist in 5 years. I think if you told me which one do you want to put your $1,000 into and forget about, I would much rather do that with Bitcoin than with Ethereum or anything else, pretty much.
Right. On the flip side, if you think that Ethereum has some life in it, it's really low right now, like relative to Bitcoin.
Yes, I think Ethereum is pretty cheap right here, and potentially a great swing investment, or even up to like a year plus investment, and could very well outpace Bitcoin over the next 12 months from these levels. It's just, you have to pay attention to that in a different way. And I think if you're going to look at altcoins, I think Ethereum could be a great one to start averaging into. And I think that you may end up being quite happy with that investment. I think that a lot of altcoins, especially as you get down the line, if you look at if you go to CoinMarketCap and look at what it had on there in 2014 and then 2016 and now 2018, the list of the top 50 coins or whatever changes drastically, and some of those become essentially worthless. And I think that's extremely important to pay attention to in terms of which ones are you going to kind of set and forget and say, hey, I believe in the fundamentals and I think this will be around a long time. The ones that you're going to put money into for the long haul, I think you need to be very careful with. And beyond Bitcoin and to a lesser degree Ethereum, that list of coins that I feel personally like, okay, I'll hold this for the next year or something, that list gets pretty small for me. I consider most crypto assets as things that I'm willing to trade, but not things I'm willing to be like an investor in.
Yeah. Are you looking at like other like sub Ethereum alts as an opportunity right now? I mean, some of the stuff is very cheap.
Yeah, my kids became ZRX maximalists throughout that dump. So I'm pretty responsible when I invest my kids' portfolio, whereas I'm a little more degenerate with my own. So when we were in that 6K range, they had a little bit of Bitcoin, but they had the vast majority of their savings that they have in crypto in cash. And so I was actually a buyer on their behalf, and because of the platform I use, ZRX was an available asset. And I really loved that pricing. When it got below 50 cents, I tried. And then when it got to 40 cents, I tried hard. And they swing traded ZRX a few times, and now they're very happy little ZRX holders, because I do think that ZRX is one that the project will be around. Whether the token will maintain a high value, I'm not totally sure, but I have greater confidence in ZRX than a lot of other ERC-20 type of tokens, because a lot of infrastructure is being built on top of ZRX. So that was one where I was willing to do a swing trade, and I'm willing to hold that for a while, because I think it has some opportunity personally. Now, I don't know necessarily at this price or that price for giving other people an outlook on that, but for paying attention to an investment that my kids are making and having proper risk management and whatnot, I felt comfortable with that. So they're pretty happy with where they got their ZRX.
I mean, to be like the dumb buyer in the room, as I usually am, if you ever think that there's going to be like good times in crypto again, like if you just imagine that moment will someday come, and then you look at like ZRX, which is now on Coinbase, and it's trading for less than 50 cents, it's very, very easy to imagine ZRX trading for significantly more than that, like during some run of good times.
Yes, I would advise people not to just consider the 50 cent component, but also the overall market cap. I mean, ZRX is a pretty high market cap. And if you look at the point of the token, it's really a governance token. That said, it's around 250 million market cap right now at its current price. Now, it went up like 30% yesterday. So it probably got sub 200 million market cap for a bit there. And it was over a billion for sure, maybe more than that, maybe like close to 2 billion for a bit. So relative to historical costs, it got pretty cheap there. And that's why I was really quite willing to dig in. And it's not the only one. Like, there are several. Like, I think Fluffy Pony or Ricardo Spagni, is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
Monero. I was listening to the Monero guy. I was listening to an interview he did with Laura Shin, where one of the questions he answered was, what's the case for Monero in a world where like regulatory authorities don't like the privacy components, or Bitcoin adds privacy? And he was kind of giving a case for Monero that I had previously been pretty down on privacy coins, which is, I know, different from your fundamental viewpoint. And yes. I was a little worried about personally whether I felt like Monero would be a good coin to be willing to trade. And I think he convinced me that I'm at least willing to trade it. I may be even willing to look at it as an investment vehicle for, you know, these swing trade type of things I'm talking about. And I think it's because he made a pretty good case for why Monero is not just like going to be viewed as the bad coin for illegal things and that kind of stuff. Like, he gave a really good case for it as a platform and for some other stuff. So I got my eyes back on Monero, and I remember looking at Monero last year, and it was like $14 early in 2017, and it went up to 500, and I was like, dang, if I could just get Monero at $14. Well, it got sub 50 on this last run, like, or maybe just low 50s. Yeah. So it's another one that could be a fantastic investment at these levels to average into.
I'm a pretty, you know, I'm a long time Monero holder. And my original buys were actually around 50. So like, full circle we have come. But the other reason I think there is to like Monero is Monero already works and people are already using it, which is something that like you can't actually say about 99% of altcoins.
Yeah, very few coins have that to say for themselves, for sure.
Like, I sort of file it closer to Bitcoin than I file at most of the alt projects.
I agree with that completely. When I talk about the risks for it, I think if the U.S. government especially was to say, hey, this cryptocurrency is illegal now, I think Monero would be first on the list.
yeah, that's probably accurate.
And I think that Monero It's really interesting from a technology perspective, and I think he gave a great privacy case for it, or a great case for why privacy is matter, why privacy matters, and he dug into some of the technical features of it, and I think that he just convinced me that it's worth giving additional attention. Now, if Monero was outlawed, I don't think it would make it higher priced, but I think it may still be used a lot. Even if illegal, because of its particular set of features. And I just personally consider it more of like a transactional thing and not as much like a store value thing. So I think it may still become popular or may still be popular for certain use cases if it were made illegal. I just don't think there would be an investment case for it as much as like this is useful for transacting. And I consider those as different things, whereas Bitcoin I consider more of a store value type of coin. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Does that make you a Zcash buyer? I mean, Zcash is not going to be found illegal by the U.S. government. It does many of the same things. I have more criticisms of it, but you're going to be able to buy it on Gemini, Coinbase, all these places. Like, it does seem like the privacy coin has been legitimized.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about Zcash. It's still got a lot of inflation, and it's shown to not really have a great floor, and which is surprising because it's a loved mining coin. Like, people mine the crap out of it, but they're still printing a whole lot of Zcash. So eventually, I think Zcash may make for a fantastic investment. I'm just not sure what that price point is, and I'm not sure yet about from the technology side. Because it does concern me that Zcash is perfectly usable, but it's not really being used. Like, less than 1% of the transactions are privacy wallet to privacy wallet. So like the majority of use cases for Zcash currently are not really being shown. Whereas Monero appears to be being used with its intended purpose. And that's odd to me. So I'm not sold on it, but one day, maybe I will be. And certainly from a trade perspective, I'm willing to look at mini coins, Zcash being one of them. But in terms of, hey, I want to buy it now and average into it over the course of the next year, I don't know that Zcash really fits into that category for me yet.
Yeah, I'm more enthusiastic about Monero.
Do you have anything? Is there any coin that has had an ICO that you would say, like, I'll buy today and hold for a year? Like, fundamentally, you just believe it?
No, believe in not it? Really. I mean, I think we've already kind of gotten to the bottom of my like portfolio at that point. Like, I'm not really like buying anything like sub that. I still have my old Sumo coin, but that's
so is one of your lessons from the 2017 run that like you're not willing to dive in the dumpster of Cryptopia or other exchanges or far down the list of Bittrex?
Mostly just because I have no exit plan. So even if I experience like gains in the shitty alt market, I'm just going to lose them anyway because I'm just going to hold on whenever it goes down. So knowing that, it's really only worth holding things like Monero or ZRX that I would be like, okay, this is probably going to go way down, but like I have some belief it's going to go back up eventually. Like, I mean, I've rode Monero this whole way down from, you know, the Monero top, and I've very few of these things that I trade. I don't even have them on exchanges. They're just like somewhere inaccessible.
Yeah. Would you ever, what would it take for you to say, you know what, I want to learn to be a more active trader? Like, is that a thing that you consider, or are you just unwilling to take that step?
I mean, I'm interested in it. Although I actually look at, like, my brother-in-law has some crypto. He has like no apps. He never like check. He doesn't even like know what the price is. And I'm like, that's actually probably the most strategic thing I could do.
Like, not pay attention to it.
Yeah. Just like, I mean, I think we both think that like, if you hold Bitcoin for the next few years, you'll do well. And the only thing that's going to stop me from doing that is like becoming totally addicted to portfolio checking apps and like freaking out and like, you know, selling or rebuying or trading or whatever. Like, in some ways I feel like being involved in the like short-term emotional cycles or at all plays against my better instincts.
Mm. I think that's probably true. I mean, and most people who trade don't do great with it. Personally, I think
most people are down in Bitcoin value who've traded it. Like almost everyone I've talked to who's traded is like lost Bitcoin value by trading.
There's this idea. Well, I can't remember who quoted it, but basically, you know, money is designed an investment from an investment perspective. Money is designed to go from the many to the few. So it tends to be that people who trade well, they're collecting from many people who don't trade well. So like for every person
like poker,
that trades well, there are many people who do not trade well.
In a poker room, it's going to be like in an 80 person poker room, there's going to be like 6 to 8 people who take everyone's money.
Yeah, because they're the ones that go to the final table, if you will.
Yes.
That said, I personally think that there are, I wouldn't be trading, or I wouldn't be, talking to others about trading, you know, strategy if I didn't believe this. But I think that you can approach trading in a way where you don't have to look at it all the time. You don't have to follow 5-minute candles, and you can maintain profitability. And I think one thing people get confused about is you think you have to learn all this stuff. And I think you can actually approach trading with some relatively simple strategies, and more importantly, some risk management. And I think when I've made my own mistakes in crypto, which are, it's funny, I haven't made the same mistakes as often in equity markets, is this idea of basically fearing missing out on a big move and therefore taking a larger drawdown than you should have because, you know, it didn't do what you expected or whatever. And I don't know what, psychologically, that's one of the bigger things that I had to work through trading crypto relative to trading equities and stuff. And once you work on that and master that, like, you become a much better trader. And also trading relative to Bitcoin value and relative to USD value with different altcoins and stuff, you compound losses really, really quickly if you're losing money relative to Bitcoin. So like, let's say you're trading ZRX, like we mentioned before, and you buy it, I don't know what it's priced at, 10,000 Satoshis. If you buy it at 10,000 Satoshis and then you sell it for a loss at 5,000 Satoshis, you lost 50%. But for ZRX to have done that relative to Bitcoin, Bitcoin probably went down too. So if Bitcoin went down in that same time, now you just stacked your losses even greater. And that's why the USD losses on some of these coins, I was looking at NEO from the top to the bottom the other day went down 97% relative to the dollar. Can you believe that?
I mean, and again, there's somewhere out there to whom NEO is like the way we just described ZRX. And they're like, NEO, great project, solid fundamentals. I'm holding on to it. It'll come back. Like, there's like, that's what's sort of crazy about what we're doing when we believe in these altcoins.
Well, every asset class is the same, and there's always a buyer for every seller. And what happens when you experience these cascades is that you lose one side of the trade until you get to a certain point. And that when that happens, it becomes what's called like a liquidity event or a liquidity crisis, because there's just not anybody on the other side of the bid all of a sudden. And you have to wait until you find someone on the other side. But for the most part, in regular trading markets, there's someone on the other side that's making the bull case when you're making the bear case. And that will occur in all markets all the time. It's just part of the game. So it just takes more than one person, because, you know, people over and over again have to say, no, this needs to get cheaper, this needs to get cheaper, this needs to get cheaper, for the narrative to fully play out. So let's wrap up with let's make our own predictions. It's November 29th right now. So let's say 1 year from now, so leading into the end of 2019, if you had to give, what's that?
I didn't say anything.
If you had to give a high number and a low number, two prices that you think Bitcoin will peg over the next year, give them to me.
These are the yearly highs?
The yearly high and the yearly low. If you had to peg both sides, what numbers would you give me? And I'll give you mine too. I haven't thought a whole lot about this, so you really have basically the same amount of
money. I'm going to do 3,000 low, 10,000 high.
Okay. 3,000 low, 10,000 high.
In some ways, I think the high is much harder to predict than the low. Like, I think 3,000 is a pretty good bet. I would actually, like, put some money on, like, seeing a 3,000. The high is very hard to predict.
Yeah, I think, well, the high is, like, how far do you squeeze, right? it's very difficult for people to fully capture that. I think your 10,000 guess is actually quite good. But I'm not going to guess 10,000 because you did. And also that's a super, I actually think if we hit 10, we'll go higher. So I will give for my low, I put this pressure on myself all of a sudden. Why did I do this, Aaron? I'm going to say 2650 for the low.
Wow. Well under the Kang line.
Well under the Kang line. And I'm going to say 8,800 for the high.
Wow. Conservative.
Yeah, pretty conservative.
I mean, I guess that's a 4X from the bottom if you're pretty close, if you caught it to there.
Now, if it's not in that 8K range, I would my next like level up is to tap back over 11.8, which was where we really crushed the market this last time. But yeah, that's my range. 8,800. I actually think that's a strong case. Like we could range for the next year below that 6,400 range. Like, and that's why I was saying earlier, if people are looking to get out, that's not the worst place in the world to get out. So I'm essentially making the bet that we're gonna spike above that for a bit, have some fun above that previous consolidation range.
Yeah, I think once we're above 6,000, I'll be starting to look to like sell some, you know, and then if we go higher than like, if we go higher, I might be buying back in though.
Well, we will see, my friend.
Very good. Very good. Well, very
throughout
nice
all this,
too.
I'm still looking forward to being a participant in this market. These unwind cycles, these sideways times, they're a necessary part of a market cycle. There's a great book that I can't get out of this podcast without recommending to people. It's called Big Debt Cycles by Ray Dalio. And he talks about this idea of market cycles broadly. And one of the important things to remember is that all markets cycle. And that's what we're seeing in crypto and the Bitcoin landscape right now, too. So.
One thing what you just said made me think of, like my grounding is a little bit more in the life cycle of startups, but, you know, they've had these historical patterns with crypto. Everything's going to take longer as it goes on. Like product cycles, just like everything takes longer to evolve as it is larger. So it's not like a surprise to me that we're starting to like not talk in terms of like seasons, but we're talking about like multiple years now. It could be kind of a while before like things are really happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Even with our predictions, like I hope that we get that degree of volatility in a year, 2650 to 8,800. But it could be 2 years for reaching both sides of that. You know, it's hard to say.
We also could have 8,800 in January and it wouldn't shock me.
Exactly. And that's what's crazy. So personally, I'm too obsessive about knowing where things are. So like I have to look at much smaller time frames to be able to get the image of whether that's going to happen or not. But yeah, I think in general we'll start to establish some levels, you know, like I call it like you got to create your trading range, the bottom and the top of that range. What happened in the last bear market is eventually when the bottom was established around 167 or something like that, it quickly then went to the top of the range and then spent the next almost year inside that range. So like it established the bottom and the top of the range quickly, and then it just did a whole bunch of nothing for a long time. So maybe we'll see that. Like you said, maybe we see it in January, like go super quick to whatever the top side of the range is going to be. And then, yeah, we'll see. It's fun to speculate about. That's what I like to do. I wanted to have you on to just see what you're thinking and let people know, hey, y'all need to go listen to Coin Talk. It's such a great podcast. Y'all crack me up. Sometimes I literally like try to either refute your point or otherwise, like while I'm listening to it and doing the dishes.
There's a lot of ignorance on the show.
It's great.
If it's unclear to anyone listening, we're a little bit less well-versed in some of the stuff, the ledger, but we have a lot of good crackpot theories.
I love listening to it. I think it's so fun. So thanks for joining me. Go to, what's the URL for CoinTalk?
Medium.com/CoinTalk.
Nice. And go to ledgerstatus.com to check out this episode and past episodes. And we will catch y'all next time.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight, I can barely breathe.